I was impressed. I've seen now the world's tallest building, the world's longest street, Yonge Street. And for those of you that don't know, that's the picture of the end of the street, a long way from here. And the world's best mathematics institute. So I'm very pleased to be here and thank you. I'm going to talk about resonant heating in the Alphen cascade, which is a kinetic problem that happens in an electromagnetic turbulent plasma. My colleagues are Steve Cowley, Greg Hammett, who are here, and Elliot Quadert, who's an astrophysicist, who introduced me to this application of the technology that we had worked out in the fusion program. So generally, by the way, the talk is too long. I will go quickly and respond. If you want me to slow down at a point and go into the detail, I'm happy to do that. So I'm going to kind of gauge the talk to what people find interesting. So there are interesting questions in plasma physics which do require some knowledge about the nonlinear development of low-frequency waves. And by that, I mean fully nonlinear, the frequencies and the frequency shifts are comparable. But all of the frequencies are well below the cyclotron frequency. And when we're interested in plasmas like that, an appropriate description is gyrokinetics. It's been developed over 20 years in the fusion community. You've heard now four or five talks about it, so I'm not going to go into it in great detail. The point is, only in the last few years do we have codes like Rick talked about and what I'm going to talk about, which can solve these equations and give you interesting chances to apply them on real problems. In the magnetic confinement fusion problem, when we deal with tokamaks, there are very strong gradients in the problems which give rise to instabilities, turbulence, which then regulate and limit those gradients. And generally, in these problems, we're talking about an equilibrium, a plasma which is in magnetohydrodynamic equilibrium with small-scale fluctuations on top. So in that sense, it's sort of in the limit, the plasma limit, of the that Dave Levermore talked about for neutral fluids. Small perturbations, but the perturbations have strong gradients. And this gives rise to turbulent transport. There's other devices in the magnetic program, stellarators and other things, which are purely electromagnetic and much more interesting, and we're just now getting into those in the fusion program. There's also a new experiment which is pretty interesting at Columbia University, where they're trying to confine an electron positron plasma with magnetic fields. And we are studying the stability and turbulence that they expect to see in that configuration with this code. Now, in the laboratory, there's also an application. At UCLA, they have a large device called the LAPD, Large Alphen Plasma Device, or something like that, which what they do is they launch Alphen waves, shear Alphen waves, at nonlinear amplitudes and measure the spectrum, the damping, the heating, all these kinds of properties of the real system. And what the work I'm going to tell you about today is basically, I regard these experiments as an excellent opportunity to test the code which I'm going to describe for you. And then we can use the code to extrapolate these results from their experiment into the natural regime. What happens, this is a great experiment, but it's confined to having the beta parameter, the ratio of pressure to magnetic field square, to be very, very small. In the astrophysical and space plasma applications, typically beta is order 1 or much larger. And so the idea is to use the code, understand the low beta in the laboratory, test the code, and then go off and do applications in space. Some of the applications in space are hot accretion flows, where the mean free path is very long compared to the system size. Some things going on in the magnetosphere. This is field line resonances, which is a ionospheric phenomenon. There's also MHD so-called MHD acceleration of auroral particles, which is actually something that I'm talking about here. It's not MHD, but we'll get to that. And there's also some low-frequency pulsations observed in the magnetosphere that are likely related to this kind of phenomenon. And in the solar wind, there's an alphenic component to the turbulence. And in the interstellar medium, there's a density fluctuation, which has been measured and is now actually being measured at scales comparable to the ion gyre radius, and that we're looking for structure in the fluctuation spectrum, which we can predict from codes here in the U.S. In the world on Earth. We're trying to predict these things, and then we're actually getting a measurement of the magnetic field in an independent way if there's a feature at these scales. So why do we bother with kinetics at all? Why not do MHD? Well, for many and many applications, MHD and two fluid codes are completely appropriate. One wants to do kinetics when the long mean free path physics comes in parallel to the field. That brings in physics of phase mixing, Landau damping, also transit time damping or Barnes damping associated with the mirroring and mirror force. There's also finite Larmor radius averaging. We're interested in perturbations which are not long wavelengths compared to the gyro radius. In fact, the application that I'll get to at the end is actually you have large-scale waves interacting. They're turbulently generating smaller-scale waves, and we're interested precisely in the flow of the energy in the cascade through the gyro radius scales to much smaller scales where the collisional absorption actually, the resonant absorption actually happens, collisionless absorption. So we don't, we need to keep these FLR effects. You can't do this with an MHD calculation. And there's also geometric effects in magnetospheric problems, or if you wanted to apply this kind of code to the microphysical detail of the Steve Cowley's talk this morning, you could use this code there for trapping effects. So as I say, you've already seen several talks on gyrokinetic theory, so I'm not going to re-derive it. I would point out that the formulation I'm using is the Freeman and Chen formulation from 1982. It's a complete implementation in this code. The important things are we're assuming that the frequencies are small compared to the cyclotron frequencies. It's natural, and we assume that the wavelengths of perturbation along the magnetic field are long wavelengths compared to perturbations perpendicular to the magnetic field. And all of the amplitudes are ordered small, the fluctuating macroscopic kinds of quantities, although the gradients of them can be order one. There's three important time scales. The fastest time scale is the inverse cyclotron gyration time. The next time scale, the next longer time scale that you come to is the dynamical evolution time, the Alphane time, or the shear, any kind of wave, inverse wave time of the problem you're interested in. And then on much, much longer, I guess that's a little bit funny. Those arrows all seem to be backwards to me all of a sudden. This should be much, much less and much, much less. So the time for transport or heating is actually the longest time in the problem, okay? And the applications that we're all talking about rigorously use this separation of time scales to do a multi-time scale analysis of the equations. Okay, so there are lots of these codes that have been developed in the fusion program. The one that I'm going to tell you about is a flux tube code, which means what we do is we take some macroscopic system, we strip out one magnetic field line, follow it however it goes through space with whatever geometry that it has. We actually work in Clebsch coordinates, so I do assume the existence of a Clebsch description. But otherwise, we can... I'm going to get to that in a minute, but essentially I'm saying that the B field can be written as grad alpha, as the cross product of the gradient of two scalars. Pardon me? That's right, yeah. Yeah. That actually is going to, at the end, I'm actually calculating the heating of the plasma due to the turbulence, and the diagnostic is keeping the terms that Freeman and Chen dropped. So the idea is on the dynamical time scale it's conserved, but on the long time scale you want to know what's going on. And the distinguishing feature of this code is actually that beta much larger than 1 is fine. We typically, since we've started doing astrophysics with this code, do betas of 100. Not 100%, but 100, which is very different from most fusion code that have been developed. And it's freely available. Anybody can get it and use it, as some people here have. Yeah. Yeah. DOE requires that. Most people just ignore the fact that DOE says, we paid for your code, and anybody that wants to use it can use it unless we forbid them. So I can't give it to certain people in certain countries. But I'm ignoring that, so... Don't tell anybody. Go ahead. That's the only it's on the web and you can get it. Yeah. all the source code and 400 or 500 pages of documentation. So, all right. So there are inappropriate applications of these kinds of techniques, and I think it's important to emphasize what the inappropriate applications are. If you have frequencies greater than the cyclotron frequency, or for example, you're interested in a problem for which cyclotron damping is very important, don't use these techniques. If you have large-scale order one fluctuations, such as occur in the solar wind, you can't use the gyrokinetics that I'm presenting here. Hong Chen's generalization is the kind of thing that you would consider for that. There's no fast magnetosonic wave in the gyrokinetic equations that I'm using here. So we have none of that physics. Velocity space instabilities are problematic. If you want to treat those, it's a bit kludgy. It's not really what it's designed for. And then finally, if you were dealing with a strongly collisional system, it's kind of overkill to try to keep 400 or 500 points in velocity space at every point when you can get away with a perfectly good fluid description. One interesting thing for the point of view perhaps of some of you here is that this is a microscale kinetic code which will give you a reasonably faithful description. I'm going to try to convince you that it's a good description of the underlying kinetic dynamics, from which you could take moments and get some understanding of what the fluid dynamics are doing in a fairly highly resolved situation. All right, so here's the Clebsch coordinates. And what we're doing is assuming the gyrokinetic equation describes the evolution of a perturbed distribution function, which is a function of the three spatial coordinates, the two that appear in the Clebsch potential, and then a coordinate which measures the distance along the field line, energy and magnetic moment, all evolving in time. Yes? It's in stellarator geometry. Fully arbitrary geometry. Well, I am assuming, yes. I am working from here, so there. It doesn't assume. I don't think it assumes zero helicity, but it does assume rational surfaces. I mean, flux surfaces. Zero helicity. Okay. Let me come back to that. It's a point that I haven't thought through, and. Helicity is very important. Helicity is very important. This came up. We had a meeting like similar to this one last week in Maryland at the Center for Scientific Computing and Mathematical Modeling. And some questions came up about helicity. And although I've studied helicity in an MHD context, I never really thought about it too much in this context. And so it's a good point. The time derivative that appears here is where the nonlinearity in the equation is. And this nonlinearity involves a field chi, which is the electrostatic perturbation potential and the magnetic potential written in A parallel is reasonably normal. I've chosen to write delta B parallel instead of delta A perp, which is conventional in the fusion literature. And these Bessel functions that appear here represent the gyro averaging of that the particles are gyro-averaging over the field, so they don't see the full field response. Okay, I'm going to skip through this part quickly because you have seen some talks. Essentially, we also have to have Maxwell's equations. You know Poisson's equation, dV is 4 pi rho. In gyrokinetics, that turns into the top equation up here. And similarly, Ampere's law gives rise to these equations, which are familiar, and this is the gyrokinetic formulation of them. And essentially, it's the same kind of structure. There are field terms and then various integrals over the distribution function. So the reason, point to note in terms of a numerical application, the only time that different energies and magnetic moments are needed for the evolution of a particular distribution function is when you take the integral to get the sources for Maxwell's equations. So generally, you can take a code like this, spread it over a very large number of processors. Every processor has the full nonlinear spatial problem on board, and then the only time they have to communicate is to get the sources for Maxwell's equation. So it parallelizes extremely well. We use 1,000, 2,000 processors routinely. Okay, I'm going to... I see I'm running low on time here. What I want to do is take that equation here. Pardon me. Here. I'm going to throw away the terms that are kind of kitchen sink physics. This omega D here is magnetic drifts that arise from curvature and gradients of the magnetic field. This here is inhomogeneities due to density and temperature gradients. And here we have a collision operator, which for a moment I'm going to put aside. And let's just see what the dispersion relation is that gyrokinetics gives you so that we can test this code and try to get you to believe that it does the kind of physics you might be interested in. So, this is the dispersion relation you get. And essentially, we can factor the dispersion relation into three parts. This purple part is, has the shear Alphane wave in it, and then is, in general, has more physics, which I'll talk about. The red part has the slow magnetosonic wave in it, and they're coupled by some terms which, although it's not transparent, take my word for it, are proportional to the K-perp rho squared. In other words, at long wavelengths, this term goes away, and you just have shear Alphane and slow magnetosonic wave as advertised. There's no fast magnetosonic wave, but otherwise you recover the MHD waves. So hiding in here a couple of terms, this S is actually an expression involving the plasma dispersion function, which is going to give rise to some of the waves that you're familiar with in a kinetic plasma. This C, likewise, has plasma dispersion functions in it and also gives rise to various kinds of damping physics, which would not be present. No, I've taken omega star to be zero. It's homogeneous plasma. And finally, there are these Bessel functions all over the place, which in the long wavelength limit assume simple forms. But we're taking, this is a spectral calculation, spectral theory, so we keep all the K-perps. We don't make any expansions and just evaluate them all. All right, so let's go to the long wavelength limit where we don't have any finite Larmor radius coupling. So there's a shear Alphane wave in a slow mode, and the dispersion relation for the shear Alphane wave is just omega squared is K parallel V Alphane. In the slow mode, has this dispersion relation, which isn't transparent. But if we expand this slow wave out a little bit and take a limit that people know, low beta, so it turns out that means S has to be roughly zero, and then the solution to this dispersion relation, if Ti over Te is much less than 1, is actually where the ion acoustic wave lives, right? So omega is K parallel Cs with weak damping. So the various waves that one wants to see are in these equations. We can go and look at the slow mode in the large beta limit. And in the large beta limit, the slow mode is actually heavily damped in a collisionless plasma. And this gives rise to much of the interest in the astrophysical applications. So you have a heavily damped slow mode, and if I take this dispersion relation and work it out, I can get that the damping rate, omega over K parallel V thermal I, goes like 1 over beta, and in fact agrees with the original a long time ago calculation of Emil Foote and Colesrud. So overall, we have this dispersion relation. Now if we're going to go to K-perp rho of order 1, the finite Larmor radius coupling comes in. And this is the physics that we're interested in with this application of this particular code. What we have is on very long wavelengths, we have the excitation of shear Alphane waves. They cascade through the nonlinear terms until you excite until you get to this region of the dispersion relation where the finite Larmor radius effects couple the undamped shear Alphane waves into these heavily damped slow modes. And suddenly all the energy in the cascade gets drained into resonant absorption and the particles become heated. And the central question for many astrophysical applications is, when this occurs, is it the electrons or the ions or some tiny minority species that gets all that magnetohydrodynamic energy? Because after all, you often have large amounts of energy that are cascading down. This is the process in a collisionless plasma. These are the waves in a collisionless plasma which correspond to that absorption. And if we take this dispersion relation and consider Te of order Ti, we find what some people call a Whistler wave. It's actually kind of a kinetic Alphane wave. Omega goes like K parallel V Alphane, with an additional factor of K perp rho, which gives the dispersion, which allows things like fast reconnection and some other effects. And we also have damping. So this is not a fluid theory. We have resonance, which gives rise to some damping. So the integration scheme, I'm just going to skip through. Essentially, I'm going to tell you the bright blue parts here. So we have the gyrokinetic equation, and the point is all of the linear terms and the sources are done implicitly along the field line. This allows us to take large time steps compared to the free streaming velocity along the field line. The collision operator is actually an energy-dependent Lorentz collision operator, which is also treated implicitly in pitch angle space. And the nonlinear term here is evaluated explicitly with a D'Alia pseudospectral algorithm and a second-order Adams-Bashforth integrator in time. The time step is adjusted, so as we go along, this is the details of the implicit parallel dynamics. The key is that the distribution function at the future time in the numerical scheme that we use is the integral dz over v parallel in the large time step limit of whatever stuff is on the right-hand side. So we're naturally orbit averaging over whatever dynamics is happening as the along the field lines. And this is a very powerful technique in the fusion program. This allows us, for example, to treat these particle orbits that look like bananas that were described with large time steps and accurate physical response. The collision operator, I just stuck up here because people were talking about collision operators, and I want to point out that two things. One, we have a second derivative in pitch angle space. This C is defined here. It's essentially just V parallel over V. So we have a collision operator. It has this form. The important thing about the collision operator is that it provides regularization for the whole problem. Okay? So the collision operator, we can set the collision frequency to be very small, and the distribution function develops striations. The dynamics of the low order moments of the distribution function are very well modeled, and the most wiggly stuff is collided away with a physical collision operator. So this is how we deal with some of the issues that arose here. And then we have the usual pseudospectral method, which I'm going to blow through. The kind of things that we can calculate, this doesn't come through too clearly, but we can calculate linear wave, nonlinear actions, turbulence, reconnection. This is actually a problem that we were doing in a high beta toroidal plasma where it just came out. These are Poincaré plots of the field lines coming through a point, and there's a rational surface here. The point is we actually have reconnection developing. There's plasma flowing in here, an island is developing, and the scales, I apologize, you can't read them. This distance here is 1 gyroradius. This distance here is 60 gyroradii. So this is a very tall structure that's very narrow, and it's one of the features that we've taken care of with the coordinate systems that we've chosen and the spectral method is we can treat these highly anisotropic structures with some kind of fidelity. It's not perfect, but it's not bad. All right, in the last couple of minutes, what I want to do is go over this problem of the kinetic Alfvén waves and just to show you where we stand. In order to look at damped waves or neutrally stable waves, it's a little bit difficult with an initial value code to prove to somebody that that we have all the right physics. So what we did is we installed an antenna with a variable frequency, and we basically treat the whole gyrokinetic system as a driven harmonic oscillator, right? We vary the frequency of the driver, and we get a Lorentzian response back in terms of the amplitudes in the code. You take the mean and the full width at half maximum, and that tells you the frequency of the system and the damping rate. We do that at long wavelengths and we get very narrow Lorentzian response, which is a very weakly damped mode. And as we go to shorter wavelengths, we get wider Lorentzian response, which is more damping. Do that over and over and plot the frequency now as a function of K per pro I. The line here is the direct solution of the warm plasma dispersion relation, and the blue boxes are the results from the numerical code, which we're going to go on to use in a nonlinear setting, but the linear waves are what lead to the absorption. So the normalization here is that omega over K parallel V Alfvén, so down here at long wavelengths, here's MHD living down here. As you go towards K per pro I large, there's a transition, and then you have kinetic Alfvén waves, right? Yeah, this is actually beta of 10. And the imaginary part of the waves, this is the resonance that we're actually doing. This is the growth rate with the same normal, the damping rate with the same normalization. And what you see is around Cape Herpero of 1, there's strong absorption of the wave. And this is, for these parameters, I'm just saying, is actually corresponds to ion heating. So these waves are being absorbed preferentially by the ions. Okay. So if we calculate, in fact, the ratio of the ion heating to the electron heating through that same scan, then we can say, remember, the heating was maximal around Cape Herpero of 1, but the ratio here, as you go to long wavelengths for these plasma parameters, which were here, the damping is almost all in the ions, and the electrons are very small, very little heating, and as you go to high Cape Herpero, there's relatively more electron heating or absorption. Okay, remember those results. This doesn't come through very well. Actually, it's my screen, you can't see it at all. This isn't so terrible. Since the work by Goldreich and Sridhar was done by Goldreich at Caltech and Sridhar here at the University of Toronto, I'm going to assume, unless asked, that most people are familiar with the ideas of the Goldreich-Sridhar cascade. Essentially, the important thing is that there's a scale-dependent anisotropy that's predicted to develop in MHD shear alpha and turbulence. The beautiful impact of it is, as you go, this is the K-parallel log, and this is K-perp log, and as you stir at very large scales and the energy cascades along, the prediction is that it will go along this line. The cyclotron frequency is way up here, and well before the turbulence gets to cyclotron kinds of frequencies, it's hit K-perpero of order 1, and this resonant absorption happens. Okay, so we don't have to worry about cyclotron absorption. What we're interested in is Landau damping and Barnes damping. The critical parameter that determines whether or not it's gyrokinetic is this parameter. And I'm running a little bit low on time, so I apologize. We don't want this parameter to be larger than 1, because then we would have cyclotron physics as the dominant physics. It turns out for the astrophysical problem that we're most interested in, this parameter is of order 10 to the minus 4 to 10 to the minus 5. So it's very small. We're very happy. We can actually apply a gyrokinetic microscale code to calculate the resonant absorption of these waves with some confidence. Okay? And then application of the various experiments that I mentioned at the beginning depends on which experimental parameters are chosen. And you can't use it for all experiments, but you can use it for some. I only have 2 slides left. This is a plot of nonlinear gyrokinetic simulations in the long... Okay, so I've showed you... Let me give you a roadmap here for the final couple of slides. I've showed you that the linear waves that we can excite in the plasma are faithfully damped and lead to the proper absorption in the various species. Okay? Now what I want to do is start stirring the plasma, getting MHD turbulence, and then look at the fluctuation spectrum that is observed. And basically... The short answer here is we stirred at long wavelengths. We have some hyperviscosity here because I'm stopping well before Cape Herpero of 1 where there would be real absorption. So we put in, you can't look above this line because that's just numerical damping to keep the scheme regularized in this long wavelength limit. And what you see is a good recovery. The gyrokinetic code is actually able to recover the MHD spectrum that was predicted by Goldreich and Sridhar. Okay, this is Elaine's question. The turbulent heating per unit volume is actually, we're not evolving the terms to keep the energy completely conserved. In fact, we're using this as a diagnostic. And the key thing here is that this heating occurs on a time scale delta squared compared to the dynamics of the simulation. So there's energy loss, but it's over a time scale that's very, very long, and in fact, it's what we're interested in measuring. We don't think it has a dynamical impact. We're interested in measuring what it is. And so, in fact, the decision to simulate a single flux tube with a constant background temperature is justified as long as that same delta parameter that gave us the linear theory was okay. Also tells you that the nonlinear calculation is all right. All right, so we've actually started a sequence of 1,000 processor runs at NERSC to calculate the absorption characteristics of plasmas stirred by shear alphane waves over a range of betas and a range of temperature ratios, such as one might find in astrophysical plasmas. We started at high beta with high Ti over Te, the same parameters that I showed you earlier, where we expect strong ion absorption. And so the linear or quasi-linear theory predicts almost all the energy should go into the ions. Our first nonlinear simulations, however, find that there's only that the heating fraction is only a 3, not 100, which you might have expected. So this is kind of interesting. There might be some interesting physics. Basically, we're just now beginning to analyze these results and do higher resolution calculations to see whether we really believe them. So I think I'll stop there. I'm done.